Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Ask the GP every Monday afternoon, where we get you a little bit of free advice if you've any medical questions, queries, or something you want sorted. Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic is with us today to answer all of your questions. Niall, how are you doing?
Doing well now.
Yeah, all good. Yeah. 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Niall today. This listener has urticaria on 7 antihistamines a day, and now started on steroids for 2 weeks. It's chronic, have it since last September. Is there a cure for it, please? Thanks. What is it, first of all, Niall?
So it's kind of urticaria is a medical term for hives. So you get these kind of raised wheals, usually as an allergy or a reaction to something. And when it's chronic, it usually means it's kind of gone on for like a good while, like more than 6 to 8 weeks anyway. Now, if this person is on 7 antihistamines and steroids, they've already seen somebody. But it just causes an intractable, uncomfortable itch. And sometimes a trigger is found, sometimes it's quite hard to get one. It usually falls under the treatment of somebody called an immunologist, which is a consultant specialist in things of that nature. Most of the time, really, I mean, it's a little bit out of my lane, but I don't think there's a specific cure, so to speak. And they generally treat the symptoms and try and avoid the triggers if they know those as best they can. But it's a very frustrating condition. Oh, and God, the mainstay of treatment is antihistamine.
And finding the triggers, is that a process of elimination?
Kind of. So usually if someone is up with 7 antihistamines and they need steroids, I would have referred them to an immunologist, and they do really sort of off-piste kind of bloods, looking into their cell lines to see if they can find out what the cause is. And sometimes they can find it and they'll advise people to avoid certain things, and sometimes they can't. And if they can't, then it can be quite a frustrating condition, and it can be quite chronic and continuing. So it's, as I would say, it's a little bit out of my lane, but I don't necessarily think there's a specific cure, so to speak.
This texter, Niall, has a large Baker's cyst on the back of their knee. I'm wondering if you can ask Niall if it's a good idea to get it removed, if it's not too painful.
So a Baker's cyst is an entirely benign thing. So it's like a golf ball, anywhere from a pea to a grape to a golf ball sized cyst, which is a spongy connection between the back of your knee and the front of your knee. So it's synovial fluid or lubricating fluid. So it's not pus or anything like that. So if it's not bothering the person, I wouldn't go near it. I wouldn't be an advocate of sticking needles into things that don't need it.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Exactly. Because they do... Sometimes people, they get quite large and painful because they'll press on a nerve and they do need to be removed or treated, but they can recur, and it's an operation and a procedure and so on. So if it's not bothering that person, I'd leave it alone.
Okay. This listener does go on to say it's not painful either, though. So it's probably just something that's maybe bothering them.
Yeah, it's probably just sitting there. They can maybe feel it when they watch in telly, or sometimes a helpful person will point it out to them if they're wearing shorts or something.
Yeah, lots of very helpful people
very
who love
helpful.
To do that. Yeah.
Yeah,
this listener is asking about new technology called, is it flow neuroscience work for depression? I'm wondering if I should invest in one.
I'll be honest and say I've never actually heard of it. So I'm not really sure what that means. It could be some new way of dealing with depression. I'm not sure. I know we do adopt techniques a lot of the time from the NHS, kind of behavioural techniques and stuff along that line, and we would adopt those into practice. But flow and neuroscience, I don't know much about it. When I see should somebody invest in one, I'm always a bit cautious. So if a patient brought that to me, I'd go off and I'd read up on it and come back to them.
Okay. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Dr. Niall Breen today. This listener says their baby turns 4 months this week, Niall, and hasn't cooed in over 2 weeks and doesn't really laugh or squeal. I'm wondering, though, is it a major cause for concern?
I wouldn't say it's a major cause for concern. So small children and babies over the first 2 years, they have a huge amount of development. And one of those is their social development. Babies definitely do start cooing early on. And between, I suppose, 4 months up to 6 months, you definitely would see children laughing and reactive smiling and interactive means of communication like that. 4 months, no, I wouldn't say it's a cause for concern. This sounds like a very switched on, clued in parent. I would continue to keep an eye on that. I mean, as a parent with young children, you can really tie yourself up in knots. If you look this up on the internet, it'll definitely have a whole variety of opinions. But one thing we know is that people's development proceeds at different paces for different people. So that wouldn't necessarily be a cause for concern. And I would expect over the next couple of months that it would begin to iron itself out.
Okay.
But if not, these are the kind of things that we like to see. And we would encourage people not to sit at home worrying about it and to come into us to have a chat.
Okay. I have a tiny flesh-coloured bump on my ears, as this listener. My GP thought that it might be an early BCC and gave me, is it the Efodix cream, which I've used for 3 weeks. It hasn't changed colour or in any way. Should I continue or could it be something else?
If it hasn't affected it at all, it might be worth having another look at it. If it's a BCC, often the best way to get rid of those really is...
What is that, first of all?
Oh, sorry. So a BCC stands for basal cell carcinoma.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay, which is technically a cancer, but I don't know if you could say it's a good thing about it, but it's not like a melanoma that starts on one part of the body and can wind up everywhere. A BCC will just grow in that area. So a lot of the time they do need to be excised or cut away and sent to the laboratory. So if a conservative treatment isn't working, it may be that person needs to see again, go back and have a look at it again, or get it chopped off, basically.
Okay. Please ask Niall for any advice. It's actually for my husband. He randomly gets inflammation so bad that his body is like a radiator on full blast. He always thought it was just him experiencing this, but I was happy when I could feel the very strong heat radiating from him at night. He got tests done, like a physical MOT in a private clinic. Got no answer, though. We've done some elimination diet that has helped reduce lactose, but it's still happening.
Yeah, it doesn't sound to me like something dietary related, first off. So I'm not sure about the exclusion there. When somebody seems like they're very hot, or they're perspiring, or there's a lot of heat coming off them, especially at nighttime, I'd be interested to know, is this person sweating as well? Are they getting significant night sweats? Now, if they've gone to a private hospital and they've had a testing done to try and not rule it, they may not have been able to say, well, this is the cause, but they were probably able to outrule 10 or 12 scary causes. Okay. So I think it'd be very interesting to see what that report actually shows. If somebody comes into me like this, one of the first things I want to get is a chest X-ray. Okay. To make sure that that's clear. And the baseline set of blood, stuff like their thyroid and stuff along those lines. What would be interesting to know as well is this person, say, we sometimes see a thing called the metabolic syndrome, where in people who are a bit overweight, who tend to store fat around the liver, who have difficulty losing weight, and they often have high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and a constellation of things. And it can manifest that they look quite flushed or sweaty or warm. So I think that's probably somebody who needs another review of some sort or another look over things. Mm-hmm. Maybe not just a general scattergun thing, but to go to their doctor and say, I'm worried about this particular issue.
Okay. Should you get your earwax removal done regularly, asks this listener, is it even necessary at all to get it done? I've never had it done. I did see a small advert for it when I was in with the GP. I feel like my hearing is somewhat reduced by something in my ear.
Okay, so we all produce wax, and it's a totally natural process. And the reason that we do is that it protects us against excessive moisture, which is a lovely medium for bacteria to grow in. So if you have a lot of wax, that isn't necessarily a pathological or a worrying process. Mm. For most of us, we have wax there and it doesn't really cause us any problem. The only time I would ever go near wax would be if it's affecting your hearing. If your hearing is okay, then I wouldn't go near it. If your hearing is problematic, so if your hearing is diminished or you're not hearing the television or you have difficulty when you're out on the pavement or whatever, then I would use drops. You can get them in the pharmacy. They're only a few euro, dewaxing drops. And then having done that, I would then go to your GP and he or she would be able to syringe them for you.
Yeah, simple as that.
Exactly, yep.
Now, this texter says, my sister found out during the routine checkup before her ultra marathon that she has a leaky valve in her heart. I'm wondering, is it serious and will it prevent her from doing the marathon next month?
Well, ultra marathons, I think, are double the distance or
right.
something like that,
yeah.
something mad. So look, I suppose a leaky valve, again, that's a real big constellation of things there. So some of us can have very, very minor, what we call regurgitation. So when your valve opens, blood is meant to go through it and it's meant to close pretty much perfectly again, and blood's meant not to go back down the same direction, a bit like a one-way street. So if you were to take 100 people at random from this building, there's probably two or three of us who would have minor leaks that will never cause us a problem and will never come to bear. And then there are some people who have a very significant leak that if it isn't dealt with, that it could cause a problem. So whoever has, I suppose, done the echo test of their that person's heart, they should be able to quantify that leak. And is it a clinically significant one or not? And that person's sister should go to whoever the healthcare provider was that, that ordered that and just follow that up with them. If this person hasn't been told not to do an ultramarathon, then I'm assuming that it's probably something relatively trivial or that may not be serious or may not need any treatment now. That would be my read of it. But
the need to find out of whoever carried out the check in the first place.
Well, this is that person's sibling. Yeah. So they probably should go to their sibling first then see if they can navigate it that way.
Okay. Can you ask Niall how I can deal with menstrual migraines? It's really affected my life every month for days. I'm 48 and at the end of my tether.
Well, again, I suppose I would be interested into where this person got that term and whether they diagnosed that themselves or whether they're diagnosed by their doctor. I think if they're diagnosed by their doctor, they're definitely worth going back there. And there are treatments that you can take, pain relief that you can take. The person is 48. They're probably getting close to menopause, but if they're still having a regular, if they're describing a menstrual migraine, then they're probably still having regular periods. So they might be potentially perimenopausal. Mm. So somebody like this, I'd want to know, are they having 12 periods a year, or are they having 2 or 6? Or I'd probably want to get a little bit more of the history. But when somebody says that something is really that severe, then I think they need to follow up on it and get another look at it.
Okay. This listener says they have an 8-year-old daughter, Niall, who's come home from school multiple times with headaches and tummy aches. We've had bloods done, no infection or anything like that, but she's now mentioned seeing green blobs, as she describes it, in front of her eyes. Should I worry?
I suppose, again, it's something you'd want to drill into a little bit more a lot of the time for children. And it's such a delicate balance because you never want to sound like you're dismissing somebody. But at the same time, for a lot of time for children, when they have some strife or stress or some issue, it'll often manifest as abdominal or tummy pain. So it sounds like they've already been proactive and getting bloods done. I suppose I'd be very interested to know what a urine sample shows. I think that'd be more useful in many ways than getting bloods done.
So go back to the GP and look for that.
Potentially. I'm sure their GP has probably already done that. The green blobs, I'm not really sure. Are they seeing it in their vision? Is that what they said?
They didn't actually say, just green blobs in front of her eyes.
It's under their eyes. Might be worth getting a formal eye examination from an optician. A child who's 8, I would take as at face value. They may not be representing what's happening exactly accurately.
Yeah.
But if they're bringing it to the table, I think I would have I would get their eyes tested just to make sure that that isn't something.
And just finally, I'm on Let's Resolve tablets for breast cancer. My hair is thinning and I have pains in my joints as side effects. Is there anything I could take to counteract those symptoms?
Well, the hair thinning isn't a very nice symptom.
No.
You definitely can use enriching shampoos, and you can use shampoos that include things like minoxidil in them, and also Nizoral shampoo is very good for preventing the hair thinning. Also, it is a side effect from the medication, though, as far as I'm aware. And I think if it's generally speaking, the specialist will advise to maintain it if they can manage that side effect. If the side effect is very debilitating, they can often look at an alternative.
Okay. Niall Breen, some listeners' questions we didn't get to today. We will keep them on file, though, for next Monday afternoon. So don't worry, we will try and get an answer to your problems. If we didn't get round to it today, that's Dr. Niall Breen, Portmarnock GP Clinic. Niall, thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.